This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Cosmic Eye Monthly Forecast Sagittarius season. And for Sagittarius season, I have a very special guest with me, Christopher Renstrom from rulingplanets.com. Hi, Christopher, welcome.
Hey, hi, thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. Such a pleasure to be doing this with you. So let's go into Sagittarius. So of course it's mutable, transpersonal, fire. It's ruled by Jupiter. The thighs are a thing with the Sagittarian.
They're always thundering.
They are. Thunder down under here. So it's the fire of the spirit. So it's the transpersonal fire, fire of the spirit. They are fueled by inspiration. The centaur, of course, is a dualistic sign like a lot of the mutables are. So the teacher and the student, the traveler, the guru, it's all about expansion. Would you say that?
What I love about Sagittarius and what makes it different to me than the other two fire signs is its enthusiasm. Oh, it's enthusiasm bordering on evangelicalism.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I mean, you know, Aries is that passion. You know, Leo is that heart, you know, the lion-hearted sign. And Sagittarius is the enthusiasm. It's brimming over with enthusiasm and excitability. And so it very much wants to get out into the world. It wants to experience other cultures, different people, different sorts of situations. And if it doesn't get out into the world to experience all those things through frequent flyer miles and things like that, it at least wants to tell stories that sounds like it's been there. That idea of you know, how do they do this in a culture that's different from mine? Or what's a belief that's completely foreign to the way that I was raised? But with Sagittarius, there's no foreignness. It's like, you know, it's that excitement of finding in another country your true self. I think all Sagittarians are born with this feeling that there's a burning bush out there with their name on it, and it happens to exist like 3,000 miles away, you know.
Always, like, yeah. It's never in your own backyard. Of course
not. Never. And that's why, you know, I always have this like sort of this game that I play where, you know, each sign has a t-shirt, you know, type of thing. And the Sagittarian t-shirt to me would read, anywhere but here.
Oh my gosh. And as soon as you get there, you want to go. Well, I've got five planets in Sagittarius and you've got a couple. Which were they again?
I've got one, but I love it. I have Mercury.
It's Mercury, right. And do you have Venus in Capricorn?
Venus Aquarius. Is in Aquarius.
Ah, yeah. Okay, cool. This explains your humor as well. You know, that humor side, wanting to laugh at everything, really seeing the funny side of things, especially when other people don't, then it's even more funny.
and laughing out loud. Okay,
oh, so LOL.
I mean, speaking for Mercury and Sagittarius, but also having been raised by a Sagittarius, it's like
right.
Appropriate laughter.
Yes, you know? That's definitely.
And it's loud.
Very loud. It is loud. The US has Sag rising, of course, in the Sibley chart. And the U.S. is loud.
Very loud.
You can always tell the American travelers when you're traveling in a foreign country, but you can't tell when you're in the U.S. because it seems normal. But, yeah, there is that.
Level is higher.
And everything's big. The Australian chart has a lot of Sagittarius too, and we have all these big things like the big pineapple. The big prawn isn't too far away from me.
Okay. So everything's larger than life.
There's a lot of large things.
We've got Disneyland. We have huge rockets going up into space. You know, everything's larger than life. But what I also love about Sagittarius is its humor and its folksiness. There's a sort of folksiness to Sagittarius, and its humor. I find it can be of two kinds. One is the prankster, you know. Yes. I mean, if Gemini is the trickster, Sagittarius is the prankster. Okay, they're the ones who are like pulling off or doing the frat party raids or, you know, something along those lines. But there's also a moral quality to Sagittarius. That I think comes from the Jupiter. And of course, we've got two Jupiter ruled signs, Pisces and Sagittarius, but there's a moral quality. And I think that Sagittarians really do believe in a moral universe, you know, that there is such a thing as good and bad, that, you know, they might laugh things off and be jovial, you know, coming from Jupiter. It's rooted in Jupiter, larger than life and inviting and welcoming, you know, but there's also a sense of good and bad in the universe. And Sagittarians, it's very important to be good, you know, not good in a correct way, like in a buttoned up, you know, whatever correct way, but to be a good person, you know, and to do good deeds for other people or to welcome in people or be hospitable. That's very, very important to Sagittarius.
Yeah. Well, it's a friendly sign. I remember it was at TAA Airlines. They're not around anymore, but it was fly the friendly way in the 70s. That was the big slogan, friendly way. It was the little jingle. And I always relate to that, and with Sagittarius. Yeah, it's that come one, come all. Everyone's just a friend that you haven't met yet. And if you live on the positive, you know, that positivity, the positive side of life, you keep fueling those fires of inspiration. But I think too much of the things that probably the Capricorn can take, because I always already expect that the world is, you know, you got to work, there's a lot of toughness in the world. Sagittarius becoming before that is much more naive. And I know for myself, if I expose myself to too much awfulness that humans can do, it's incredibly depressing. And I have to be very careful about that. Just, I know some signs can take it, but I can't take it because it really dampens those fires. Like, you have to be a bit Pollyanna on purpose.
Right. Well, it's Pollyanna on purpose, but it's also, and this is why I use the word evangelical with Sagittarius. There really is a belief in belief. There really is a belief in the power of faith, you know, and this is why this is the sign that's opposite Gemini. Okay. Gemini is always like poking holes in things and coming up with questions and, you know, you know, that's not going to work. Or what if we did this adjustment or whatever, but Gemini is always questioning. Okay. The Mercury signs both question. That's their big thing. Sagittarius doesn't question.
They'll tell you.
Right. I'll tell you. Exactly. Yeah. Sagittarius tells you. Okay. And where is it coming from? It's coming from a belief. It's coming from an experience of the world. It's coming from the richness of life and the wonder of being, you know, and these are the things that are so important to Sagittarius. And so what Sagittarius will do is kind of like whip up the fire in the people around it. It's why I call Sagittarians the cheerleaders of the zodiac.
Absolutely.
You know? They get everyone like spirited, you know, and if you've ever been to some of those Baptist churches where people feel the spirit, you know, they don't feel the spirit sitting politely in a pew. They feel the spirit and they get up and they run across the altar, or they, you know, sing or they praise, and, you know, it's getting up and it's like expounding and expressing this spirit.
And
this
moving.
Is what you really see in Sagittarius.
Yeah. And you're right. It's a sign of movement. Like there's no sitting down. It's not static. It's a sign that moves. I would like to think of all the signs as having a relentless quality, and they do that relentlessly. And that's certainly one for Sagittarius. You know, you could call it evangelical, the belief in the belief, definitely. And that the seeking and the freedom and the expansion, that is relentless, underlies everything.
And also the insistence that there's a moral to the story. You know, that no matter what you go through in life, okay, no matter what kind of hardships you endure, or where you may have felt broken, or setbacks, or even tragedies, okay, there's a reason why it happened, you know.
Yeah, and you've learned something.
Yeah, you learned something, you gained something from this. And it's not in that, you know, Capricorn is, as you were pointing out before, is a little harder with that. It's like, well, now you know better, you know, type of thing. But with Sagittarius, it's like, I went through this so that I could experience love, or I went through this so I, you know, it might've been a disaster, but I was so happy when I was doing this and I experienced that, you know. So Sagittarius is very experiential, and there's a robustness, right? There's a robustness to it of just like of that spirit. And as long as I have the faith in the spirit and I walk away from this experience having learned something, it's made me better as a person.
Yes.
And that's That I think is so, it's one of the more beautiful aspects, I think, of Sagittarius.
Yeah. I think it makes life easier as well, because you've got, it gives a purpose and a meaning, like that search for meaning.
Well, and no sign can take egg on its face better than a Sagittarius.
No, they'll still laugh. It doesn't matter if it's your face or their face.
It's the thing that they can have egg on their face. They can have done the biggest mess up or whatever, and they will be the first ones to laugh at themselves.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, they're the first ones to laugh at someone else.
Oh, yeah. So funny.
That's from a good place.
Speaking of which, the pitfalls of Sagittarius. And the temperature gauge is broken for checking the temperature of the room.
There's no such thing.
I'll say also, actually, before we jump into that, because the beliefs are so strong, I know, like, an insight from my own Sagittarian journey is to question your beliefs. I think the biggest growth, the place of the biggest growth for me has always been catching a belief and then asking myself, why do I believe that? Was that someone else's story and I've taken it on as gospel belief, dogma? And that really, that cracks your world open. That is just so strong. Why do I believe that? What's my belief? What's actually my experience? Does that actually gel with my experience? No.
Right. But you can also hear, just in the beautiful way that you were describing that, you can hear the element of fire. Okay. And this is what's so important, because fire is me, myself, I. Okay. Fire has to do everything in the individuality of itself. Okay. The fire signs are the signs that stand for individuality. Okay. I'm different because I'm unique and I'm fabulous. Okay. This is where all the fire signs are coming from. And just the way that you sort of, like, took us through that passage right there, Vanessa, of like, well, where did this belief come from? And is it really me?
Mm.
Okay. That's not Pisces. Okay. Because Pisces is also Jupiter ruled, but that's not the way a Pisces is going to relate to belief. Okay. Sagittarius, is it me? Does that feel like me? Does this register in who I am, the journey of myself and the unfolding of my life and my spirit? Okay. So I just sort of wanted to very quickly underline that, because there's a fiery quality there. That I think is really
that's
important.
Interesting. Yes, that is a good point. And the intellectual side will question things. Yep.
And maybe even keep belief at a safe distance.
Yes. The pitfalls, there are many, as there are for every sign, but I like to laugh at them even when they're my own sign. So you had a favorite pitfall. What was that?
Oh, my God, there's so many. okay, I think, let's see. There are so many pitfalls with Sagittarius, and the fact that they laugh at them. But I think Sagittarians are the ones that are, like, talking too loudly. Their opinions are more colorful than anyone else's. Sagittarius, if they hear a really good story, okay, will go and tell it as their own.
Oh, my God, I do that. Especially with jokes.
But what's hysterical is that I've seen them do it in front of people who told them that story. Like, the person's like, that didn't happen to you. I told you that story. And they're like, oh, shut up. You know, like, I've got my moment. Like, everyone's loving it. Like, just go away, you know, type of thing. And so there's that. They will co-opt a good story or a good line.
Joke. Yes.
You know, as their own, you know, and but again, these are pitfalls that I delight in. I think it's hysterically funny, you know.
I'll say the clumsy factor. There's definitely a clumsiness, because of that idea of proportion, I think. Oh, and I put it down to that.
That's interesting. What do you mean by that? That's really interesting.
Well, Sagittarius, I think, has got a thing about proportion. Again, like, is it really big? Is it small? Humor and comedy is built on messing with proportion of things. That's what makes it funny. Centaur is like this really weirdly proportioned symbol with this big horse body, the big rump out back, and, you know, human part here. And I relate to that when I heard that co-opting whoever taught me that. I don't even know now, but I completely related to it. And yeah, there's this proportion thing, which can be part of, I think, the clumsiness, but then the sportiness, you knock something over because your hand's flying. There's so much movement.
Right. It's so animated.
Things, but right. Then the sporty side will catch it at the same time, right. Or I'll go to trip and then I'll manage to catch myself.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's what Sagittarians tell themselves. Oh, I'm really very, as they land face first. No, I mean, they love pratfalls, okay? And, yes. and they love that. But I think you have to sort of bring up the profligate problem with the Sagittarius.
And
you
what's know, that?
That they will go through, that they will spend, they will go through things. I mean, you know, I sort of have a joke of you don't leave your credit card alone in the same room with the Sagittarius.
The big spender, yeah, the gambling, the old taking, the big spending. Yeah,
they will spend it. And so, you know, the prodigal son is a big motif in their lives, you know, that they go through periods where, you know, maybe they were rebellious or they walked out on something or they wanted everything now and they got everything now, but they trusted the stranger too much or, you know, fell victim to things and they come back repentant in some sort of way.
So, they learned their lesson.
There is a kind of prodigal son / Pinocchio flavor to the Sagittarius. You know, Pinocchio begins as a puppet and is, you know, tempted and taken on all sorts of misadventures and things like that, and ends up incarnating as a human being.
Yes, once nice.
The
nice.
Heroic act of saving Geppetto. Well, I bring up Pinocchio because Collodi, the writer of Pinocchio, is a Sagittarius, of course.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah. That's very interesting. I like that. Transcending to the human, that goes with the centaur thing too.
Yeah, because once he realizes that, you know, he's not a puppet anymore, but that he's in charge of his own choices, that's what makes, you know, that's the moral of the story.
Yes, I like that. I did always like that part of the story too.
Yeah.
I'll throw in a few things like, yeah, the spin, the big talker, exaggerating for a laugh, like they don't lie, that's a truth seeker, but there is exaggeration
or
thinking that you understand that's how I do it. I always think of skiing accidents, but I think that's a 70s thing. Sensitivity. This could be good, it could be bad. Radical honesty. Is it good? Is it bad? Well.
Wow.
foot in mouth disease.
There's also another part, which is conversion. Okay. What we have to sort of remember with Sagittarius and its affiliation with the ninth house, what makes the ninth house different from the 12th house, for instance, mm-hmm. is that the ninth house is institutionalized religion mm-hmm. and the 12th house is mysticism.
Okay. Direct so experience.
Outside that. And so there can be, and this shows up with Jupiter, there can be a converting quality, okay, which is you don't believe what I believe, so I'm going to talk you into believing this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
And I may shame you into it. I may win you over with enthusiasm. You know, I may, you know, keep you at arm's length and then welcome you when you finally my point of view. So there is a kind of converting factor or quality to Sagittarius. You know, where they kind of get up on the holier than thou thing.
It's definitely a shadow side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, very much.
And they think that they're bringing good to the world and not necessarily taking in someone else's side. So there can be a dogmatic, there can be a dogmatic
side. 100% agree. I think you have to be the evolved Sagittarian to see that you do that and why.
One last comment. You have to work on the Sagittarian quality, which doesn't come easily or quickly to the sign, which is listening.
Yes.
Okay.
Listening and learning.
And listening.
Yeah, because you'll learn more by listening than talking. That's truth. Truth there.
Right.
Mic drop. Good. On that note, let's go to our classic sign section because, of course, we have the same classic sign, as it turned out, which is...
There's so many. I mean, we could do a whole thing on Britney Spears, but you know, I mean, doesn't she start out as a Disney kid? Mm-hmm. You know, isn't that how mm-hmm. she begins? Okay. And of course, Walt Disney is a Sagittarius.
Yes. You know? And Christine was in there, Sagittarius. They were all doing it. Yeah.
Right. They were all in that stable. Yes. Okay. They're all in that Disney stable. You know, and so she begins as a young performer and things like that. She you know, emerges and does her own show and things like that. And she's wild and crazy and party girl, which of course are always the things that are being associated to Sagittarius. But this issue of freedom is such an important point with Sagittarius because it's ruled by a planet of liberation. Mm. You know, Jupiter is in Greek mythology, Jupiter liberates his brothers and sisters and sets up the next government. So that's part, you know, part of it is the desperado, you know, wandering horse, you know, horseback riding, you know, type of thing. But the other part of it is actually really seeing themselves as liberators. Mm. And the fact that she had been under the custodianship of her father. And what I found out this week that I was really surprised is that she has Lilith in Sagittarius. And Lilith is just, you know, something I've begun to wrap my mind around, but Lilith is, you know, the mythology of Lilith.
Yeah.
Wife who says no, and she won't take a passive position, things like that. But Lilith is also the idea of saying no. Okay. And the fact that she basically suffered, what is it? It's an enforced sterility that was,
yes,
that was enforced upon her.
She didn't even have her car keys or money.
But she wasn't able to conceive or have a child.
Yeah.
You know, so that sort of thing, it's very Lilith and the fighting out of Sagittarius, that it plays out in public, that it plays out in court, that Jupiter is an Aquarius, which is a liberating sign. And so its passage in Aquarius is actually what releases her from all of this. You know, so those things are so very, very important, you know, and you see them exemplified in her life and her situation.
And isn't it amazing she has yet again captured the spirit of the times where, you know, a lot of us have been locked down, we've had our freedom restricted, and she is capturing that story for mm-hmm. us. So mm-hmm. it just shot her back into the limelight again that, you mm-hmm. know, very famous people seem to just come at that time and capture things like that. I find that quite fascinating. And, of course, Sagittarius really rules popular culture. It's yeah. funny, yeah, when you look up Sagittarius, there's a bevy of celebrities to choose from because it's fire. They get out there, the right, Leos as well and the Aries.
And I love what you just brought up, that she really kind of embodied the whole idea of fighting against lockdown, you know, that she really becomes almost a composite of, you know, the hashtag Me Too and this.
Yes.
Custodianship and the being locked down and voice being taken from women and the commodification and the liberate. I mean, she really is a composite, and that's Jupiter. Jupiter is often a composite. It's the planet that weaves together all the different strands
yep.
into something fresh and new. In Greek mythology, Jupiter is the only god to birth new gods from his own body, you know. No other god does that. And they're transsexed gods, which is curious as well. You know, Athena, who's very mannish, you know, and then Dionysus, who has long hair and is very effeminate looking, you know.
Yes.
They're born from the body of Jupiter.
Well, that's interesting because yeah. Sagittarius is, you know, in the 70s when Neptune was in Sagittarius, it was gender bending. It is a gender bender sign. Like Gemini as well, they flip. They're like, well, we'll be this, we'll be that. Now, you know, we've got fluidity and non-binary, but it was called gender bending then. So, yeah, that's an interesting point about the Jupiter myth, actually. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's there's all these sort of fun things about Sagittarius.
I think the mutability, you know, you never know what you're going to get in some ways. So I've got a little quote. There's lots of little quotes from Britney. I like her success quotes, but I liked this one. I don't like defining myself. I just am.
Fire.
And there's plenty that say you can take it or leave it. Very, very sad, very fire. You can take it or leave it. You know, I'll be doing my, you know, me. So let's move on to a quick news section, things to do in Sagittarius season. I'm going to say go for a hike. Tell the truth.
Yeah. Vanessa and I started with a list of like, you know, go for a hike, go horseback riding, tell the truth. But then it's like, we decided, right, let's talk about the real things that you do in Sagittarius season. Bring a whoopee cushion to the Christmas party, tuck it under someone's pillow and wait for them to sit on it.
Put Vegemite on the toilet seat.
get the dirty soap and put it in the guest's bathroom and see when they notice.
Well, I'm going to go highbrow again and say practice radical honesty. See how you go at Christmas. Read spiritual writers for inspiration. Like Osho, he's got some great stuff. Foreign Film Festival, perhaps. Discover a new cultural cuisine or part of town.
Check out 7 books from the library that make you look smart that you'll never read.
You never read, but it makes you feel good anyway. Well, I like that the run-up to Christmas is in the silly season, literally, is in Sag, and it does show you that side of Sag where everyone goes and drinks too much and does things and maybe they regret a little later, but, oh, it was fun at the time. You know, it's so fun out with people celebrating and being silly. It really, you know, overspending. Venus is still out of bounds, but it is in Capricorn.
Right. But I'd like to make a quick note, if I may, which is about the two Jupiter-ruled signs, Sagittarius and Pisces, and what you just mentioned. In the liturgical calendar, both of these signs, which are Jupiter-ruled, rule the times of year in which you are anticipating in Christianity Christ. Okay, you have Advent, which anticipates the birth of Christ, and then you have Lent, which runs through all of Pisces, which anticipates the resurrection of Christ. And that was really fascinating to me because Jupiter is so much about divinity, you know, and the fact that in the liturgical calendar that these would be the two seasons when basically one is supposed to feel closest to God. You know, and so I just sort of wanted to underline that. I
think
that's a very important thing. That's just so much astrology is inscribed into calendars, whether they're Eastern calendars or Western calendars or liturgical calendars or your to-do list. But astrology is a calendar. And I think that it was just really rather fascinating that Jupiter would be connected to those particular times of year when one is supposed to be closest.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point. Well, what do you think about, we're moving on to the moons. Do you do intentions on the new moons or things like that?
I should.
You should, but you don't.
I don't.
Okay. I like to do the intention.
I know.
Unless it's a
does them, and I'd probably be a better person if I did.
No, it's like this. There's no judgment. It's even though it's Sag season. Oh yeah, things to do in Sag season: judge people, and then you go do it yourself.
Right, and then break the rule yourself.
Yeah, it's more fun that way. And then have a realization, have an epiphany,
so, and then wait off. Have a realization, then wave it away. Doesn't apply.
Moving on. It's a new me, new day, new me. Well. A lot of the new moons or full moons I've noticed, you know, the occasional ones had really great aspects, but we've had a lot of really gnarly setups. So I tend not to do anything during those in terms of intentions. I'm not going to put a crystal out if there's some crazy square to it. So, and right. A lot of people talk about don't do things on the eclipsed moon. So we do have the final, I think it's the final eclipse.
It is in this across, Gemini. In this
yeah, Gemini. Across the Sag Gemini axis. So yeah. December 4 in the US.
Thank goodness for that. And thank goodness for that because these eclipses, you know, have really been also triggering this Neptune energy.
Yeah, the squares been in there for so many of them, just Neptune.
And this is where it's just, I mean, alternative fact or whatever has become completely, you know, its own creature because of the Neptune. And also Neptune diffuses through air and through space. And so, you know, you can attribute a lot of the, you know, spreading of virus and the spreading of misinformation and the spreading.
What's true, what's not. They're so, it's so hard to tell.
And are you hearing the word spreading? Okay, yeah, which is a Jupiter word. Jupiter.
And with Neptune, there's just no limit, is there? It's right. Just aerosol.
No, exactly. So I think that with this last eclipse, I'm sort of looking forward to, like, you know, moving, getting on the other side of that, because it's really, if you think of media and beliefs, right? Gemini and Sagittarius, that's what's been fired up.
That's so true. And I guess it's about the path of those nodes. So those nodes are, I think they're around 1 degree Gemini Sag. So they'll be back into Taurus Scorpio before you know it. And I guess we might have a few to
Uranus.
Saturn.
Uranus, Saturn.
Yeah, we'll have the conjunctions with the Uranus, but we'll have the squares to Saturn. But for this one, final one across Sag, it's at 12 degrees Sagittarius. It is in a wide square to Neptune, so it's picking that Neptune up again. It is also, you're getting the trines to Chiron from many of the fire signs, and it's conjunct Mercury for those intuitive flashes, because Sagittarius is very, it does have those intuitive flashes.
Or propaganda campaigns.
Or, yeah, it doesn't mean they're correct. They're correct maybe for you.
We have to do the flip side.
It's true. So there is spin there. Yeah, that wide square is that mystical versus the dogma.
Which we're seeing a lot of right now. I mean, you know, in the history of the church in the West, mystics were really important, you know, like whether it was, you know, Teresa of Avila or St. John of the Cross or St. Francis of Assisi. Mystics were important, but they were also threatening. Because they would threaten the doctrine as it was being represented. So that's why in one century you could have female mystics veneered as saints, you know, Hildegard of Bingen, for instance. And then another century, those same female saints are being burned as witches.
Yeah.
You know, so the church has always had this sort of back and forth relationship with mysticism. Like, mysticism is fine within limits, but if it gets too way out there, you want to bring it back in. And so I think we've been seeing a lot of this, not necessarily in a church context,
but in a different way. Yeah.
Culturally, we've absolutely seen it. Where
I think so too. And that's really the challenge there, I think, too. Yeah, it's like you've got the dogma or the belief again, and then you've got the actual experience that can't be codified. It just can't. It's...
Well, I think a wonderful, actually, Sagittarius example, and even Piscean, is the climate change movement, okay, where, you know, it's like there is no planet B, okay? So there's this mystical uprising of, like, you know, celebrating Earth, protecting the life of Earth, future generations, and then this very dogmatic governmental stance of, like, you know, yeah, well, we're not going to really do it along those times. And so this has come out of this, and it's actually probably going to increase in frequency.
I hope so. Well, Elon Musk is thinking Mars is planet B, but I would be working out what's happening here first instead of escape.
Yeah, let's save this planet first.
Let's save this planet. Yeah, it's much better than that rock. So December 18, we have a full moon, and, of course, that's in Gemini at 27 degrees. Mm-hmm. That will be December 19 here in Australia. It's sextile Jupiter. Sun will be sextile Jupiter at 28 Aquarius.
Oh, that'll be
nice.
And
the moon will be trine the Jupiter. So that's lovely. That's one of those moons. It doesn't have any challenging aspects to that one. So get your crystals out.
And Christopher, do your intentions.
You do your intentions on that one if you do any. That's very nice. Yeah. The communication axis, the Jupiter's there just to make everyone feel great. And perhaps that will bind the collective somehow. Maybe people will be on the same page for that one. I hope so. Well,
again, Jupiter or Zeus, rather, in Greece was associated to textiles. So it was associated to the different strands that are woven together into a fabric. And if you remember his daughter Athena, she's the goddess of weaving. Okay, so you get that sort of so what Jupiter tries to do is really to incorporate. Okay, Jupiter is a planet of integration, assimilation, and incorporate. Now, sometimes assimilation is good, and sometimes it's it's not, you know, but that is Jupiter's function in a chart, is to, it governs the chart. It's to bring in all the different strands and the different ideas and not make them the same. You know, it celebrates the eclecticism of fabric, you know, of the strands that have gone into that fabric. And that's Jupiter at its best.
And you can see the rulership with the Sag there, because that's all about, I don't want you to be just like me. I want to see the difference.
Right. Who are you? And this is me. And, you know.
Yeah. What's new about what's with your culture? But then the flip side is then dogmatic. You must believe what I believe.
Right.
And I'll tell you, because I've got it right.
And who did the most appropriation, but countries that went and colonized other countries.
You know? Yes. I was going to say Sagittarius is the original cultural appropriator. It really is. Yes. And I think it's an interesting time for people strong in Sagittarius and that archetype to be confronted with this idea of cultural appropriation. I've been somewhat confronted by it because I love other cultures and I just get so excited about different expressions. But I also know how silly I would look, or, you know, I guess I wouldn't wear something that was inspired by another culture in a negative way. But then if you wear it wrong, because there's so much symbolism in a lot of different cultural expressions. Like when I was in Japan, apparently at Christmas time, they had nailed Santa to the cross. And I was like, that's hilarious. That's what we do in our Western culture with other cultures. And that's what it looks like to them. Ridiculous. But I thought it was funny and I appreciated the effort.
Well, and if you play around with that idea, it's also the rediscovery of the sacred in what has been appropriated.
Yes. Yeah. Beyond just what it looks like.
And sometimes Sagittarians can be a little puppyish in their enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, wow, this is wonderful. And I'm going to take this on and experience this. And what's it like to be, you know, from, you know, and they need to be like, no, that's not yours. You know, this is this other culture's and you don't get to just sort of take it and play with it, puppy. You know,
but they'll honor. Still, yeah, they'll learn something through it and they'll still want to give it a go, I think. Yeah, that's an interesting one for Sagittarius season to think about as well for people. So let's go into the next section, which is, Christopher, give me the headlines. What are the key signatures? What's the big ones that are standing out to you this month?
Well, I think that definitely, well, we hit on the solar eclipse. So eclipses are always a big deal. Mars entering Sagittarius. Okay. So everything we've talked about, just take gasoline and throw it on that fire.
Oh gosh. So that's December 13.
Right. With Mars in Sagittarius, there is no such thing as subtlety, nuance, or an unrecognized gesture. Everything is loud, big, and in your face.
And it's fast. It's fast. It is loud. You'll see all the Sagittarius birthday parties because they're loud and there's a lot of people because they invite everyone, because everyone's a friend.
And say no to anyone, right?
And exactly. It's exciting. Again, everyone,
hospitality. You throw open the doors. You throw open the kegs. You throw open the cabinets, and everyone's welcome. You throw open the bedrooms. You know, and everyone goes out.
And if you want to do something fast, though, that can help. Like I've noticed, I'm writing my third book at the moment, and I notice I seem to do that at this time. Every second year, Mars is in Sagittarius, and once that Mars goes into Sagittarius, I just hit warp speed and I write, like the last one I wrote half of it in, I think it was a week. It was so fast.
He's on fire.
Second half took a lot longer, the fire.
He's on fire.
I was literally on fire. You know, the Mars goes across all my Sagittarius, and I definitely ride that Brumby, you know, like it's like jumping on this horse and just going, where do you want to get to? If you set yourself a little bit of a goal, you could probably get a bit of fire behind you.
Yo, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I guess I've got the Capricorn job, right? Okay. The Venus retrograde in Capricorn. Okay. We've had so much fun and now it comes to an end because Venus is going retrograde in Capricorn. Okay.
On the 19th of December. So it's already been there for a minute.
I think what's really important about this Venus retrograde and what makes this Venus retrograde different from other Venus retrogrades is that so much time that it's spending in conjunction with Pluto right here. Okay. So in other words, Venus is going to have conjoined Pluto on December 11th before it turns retrograde on December 19th. And it's going to come back down over Pluto again. It will retrograde to where it retrogrades. And then of course, ultimately it's going to pass over Pluto a third time when it goes direct. So to me, this Venus retrograde carries a very strong Plutonian component.
And, very Persephone.
Yes, very Persephone. and it carries a very strong Plutonian component. The way that I work with Venus in horoscopes is that Venus is a planet of attraction. Okay. It talks about your power of attraction. Okay. Your rules and laws of attraction. And we're not always aware of what we're attracting or how we are attractive. And I love that you brought up Persephone, Vanessa, because Persephone is like picking flowers and that's it. Okay. Like that's it. But Pluto has been, you know, stalking her or whatever. And he comes up out of the ground and, you know, basically abducts and rapes her. Okay. So what you always want to sort of be careful of with Venus is who's answering the call of attraction. Okay. When I was living in New York City years ago, but anyway, when I was living in New York City, what I always noticed about the actresses, because, you know, I was like of that age and there were actresses or whatever, we're all living in the East Village and this is the 80s, is that they would come out with, you know, combat boots and really heavy looking, you know, like leather jackets and really this tough edge. And I'd always be like, why are you dressing like that? You know? And it was like, so no one messes with me.
Yes, that's right.
Was like, no one messes with me. So Venus is always the part in your chart that this part, which is attracting. And so you have to sort of be aware of what it's attracting. And that's not just exclusive to women. That's women and men. And it can come up.
Yes, everyone has a Venus.
Yeah, everyone has a Venus, and it can come up not just in a romantic context. It can come up in business context, competitive context, you know. But when you're talking Venus, any context which is outside the family, okay, because Venus is the attraction that's going on outside of the family. Okay, Moon is family territory, but Venus is anything that's outside the family. So when I see it beginning its retrograde around Pluto, you know, you sort of have to be aware of that there may be a nefarious quality, okay, that goes on there, or an underworld quality with the Pluto. I like to sort of see Pluto-Venus combinations as what I call Faustian bargains, okay? What did you say yes to, but you didn't read the fine print?
And why? Why? What was your agenda?
Perfect. What was your agenda? What was your motive? Perfect.
What are you getting out of this? Yes.
Right,
because actually holding you there.
Yeah, because that Faustian thing is, you know, what am I willing to trade in or purchase to get what I want? So that's something that I would, and again, that can come up in different ways. I mean, you can have a Faustian thing where it's like, I want immortality or whatever, or it could be like, you know, what am I going to do to get that job? What am I going to do to get, you know, that situation or to draw it into my life? And so Venus is also the planet of betrothals and pledges. You know, it's the planet of I do. That doesn't mean you're getting married or whatever, but it's when you agree to something, when you pledge to something, when you say yes to something. So think of your yes.
And your no. Like, I also think Venus chooses. It's choosing. You know, I like that idea of when Madonna did, you know, that Marilyn Monroe look and all the guys around her offering her these diamonds. And she's like, no, 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 no. Yes, I'll have that one. But loving, you know, enjoying it and, you know, at the same time, but still saying, no, my word is final. And yeah, the choice is there.
Usually I would like sign on and say, oh yeah, of course. But Pluto, I'm not so sure. So maybe I'm being a little bit,
there's a shadow side.
Maybe I'm being stodgy dad here or something like that. But it's Pluto and it's a retrograde. But that's what makes me a little bit more.
Well, that's what makes me think that stuff is like you were saying, it brings that up. So use that time to notice about yourself. And it's in Capricorn. How do you think that changes things more, the themes?
I think, well, because it's in Capricorn, it's going to be bringing up, I think, much more of an institutionalized or much more of a patriarchal or a much more of a worldly gain type of thing. But what we also have to remember about Capricorn and Saturn is that Capricorn and Saturn, especially the ruler of Capricorn, stands up for the outsider. Okay. Everyone sort of thinks of Saturn as like the CEO or Capricorn is the CEO or whatever. But I won't go into a long thing here. But Capricorn, if you see it shown in like the Book of Hours and other things, actually often symbolizes the lower classes of society or the outsiders, the people who chose not to integrate. Okay. So where Jupiter is very much like, you know, oh, everyone's welcome here, everyone integrate, you know, a Capricorn figure is the woman wears the headscarf, the hijab, and how the hijab became this kind of like symbol of resistance. You know, remember when the French government was saying you have to take that off?
Yeah.
Whatever. And so it was like, it was this symbol of like, no, I'm staying true to my culture and I'm resisting your Jupiterian, you know, colonizing, but I'm not going to like, or the yarmulke in Judaism, you know, I'm staying true to my faith, but I'm also not going to be integrated into your society. I'm not going to be made to look and act like you. So there's that quality.
The boundary.
Well, Capricorn has an outsider status. Mm. It's not the sign of conformity that a lot of people think it is. It's actually an outsider status. So those might be things that are coming up as well with this kind of like Venus turning retrograde and conjoining.
That's interesting, reading the divides that, you know, we're seeing, especially, you know, as this, that Saturn square, the Uranus as well, with really pushing, you know, if someone's had the jab and someone hasn't, and trying to make that split down society and then people taking their sides. And like I saw a morning show here was basically encouraging people not to invite their family or friends to the Christmas party if they haven't had the jab, and how to uninvite them. Just like they're just throwing fuel on the fire.
But you can also see how that lends itself to vaccination, right? You've gotten, whether you're a vaxxer or an anti-vaxxer, you know, there's the, at the basis of that is still the same of, you're not going to tell me what to do with my body, or, you know, and this argument over like body, you know, I mean, it's gone and it's showing up in different contexts. Mm. You know, we have the that insane Texas law that's going on here.
I saw that. Yes.
Okay. Where, you know, and so, you know, growing up in the 70s, like I did, you know, I'm used to my body myself, like women's right to choose. This is my body. You can't tell me. But then you've got these like burly cops in Manhattan saying, my body myself. You don't, I don't have to vaccinate. This is my body. So body becomes a place of resistance. I mean, there are things that just really become quite intriguing, you know, when you look at that. And so there may be a way in which Venus shows up in this particular
conference. Yeah, I'll be interested to see. And is it in for 3 months or 4 months in Capricorn?
I know. And
three or four
astrologers.
It's three or four. It's a long time. It's ages, right into next year. So Capricorns, right, or any, you know, rising, descendant, etc.
I would throw in the Venus road signs too. I would throw in Taurus and I would throw in Libra.
Ah, okay. Because rulingplanets.com. Yeah, right. Okay. Okay. Good point. So yeah. And anyone, everyone has Venus somewhere retrograding in their chart. So check where that is and observe. And don't make any perhaps binding relational.
And as Vanessa said, use your no.
Yes, use your no. Just say no. Practice. It's in Capricorn. Ah. No. So let's run through a few other dates just to so people know for their calendar. I'm going to say Mercury, well, the Sun enters a Sagittarius on November 21. November 24th, Mercury enters Sagittarius. So you're going to be talked into buying goodness knows what in the, you know, department stores by the sales assistants for Christmas. Just watch that. If you need to convince anyone of anything, this is your time. Great for the spin. Positive outlook if you've been getting a bit maybe down with all the news, a bit depressing, some of it. Look on the bright side. We've got Saturn sextile Chiron on November 26th. We've got Neptune goes direct on December 1st. Then the eclipse, then Mars enters Sag on December 16. Mercury is moving really fast, so it then enters Capricorn December 13, actually. So that's at full tilt. We've got the full moon December 18, the Venus retrograde December 19, and then Chiron goes direct on December 19 as well. And then the sun enters Capricorn December 21. So in terms of the aspects, we've got quite a lot of, there's a huge amount of trines and sextiles this month, and very much around November 29 to sort of 30 as well, which I would say is a good election date. Mm-hmm. If you want to elect to do something then, you know, we've got Mars trine Neptune, November 29, also Mercury trine Chiron, November 29, November 30, we've got Mercury sextile Saturn. It's good for getting your thoughts or something organized, of course. November 30, Sun trine Chiron, self-identity healing. November 30, Venus sextile Neptune. And there's just not any particular hard aspects except for the obvious ones that are hard for months at a time, like the Uranus square Saturn. So that's a great period that covers my birthday. So I'm happy for that.
I'm going to have a good solar return, damn it.
Yep, I'm going to have a little party. We've got, what else is happening there? A nice trine on December 20, Mercury trine Uranus. These are really the opportunity knocks. Mercury trine Uranus to break out of the box or have a bit of a download. Have you got any of those that stand out to you?
I love trines and sextiles. You know, they kind of get overlooked a lot because everyone's gaze goes towards the opposition or the square or whatever. And it's just like, you know, but trines and sextiles are the universe mending itself. You know, it's just these beautiful re-threading qualities that the planets take
off. I think so too. That's why we've put this section in, because a lot of people don't mention it. And if you're working hard during the square and the opposition, this is when the fruit ripens. Take it. Like, this is what you worked for. This is the payoff. It's part of the cycle. So
get your nose away from that grindstone.
I know.
Take a look at your life. You know, but also, you know, it's a mending. You know, a lot of times we use the word healing, but mending is a really, really good
word. Mending's a good word. I like that. So that takes us through to, we often do a section just shouting out a charity. So the one that I have found, there's lots of charities, especially in the US, is collegefund.org. Which I thought Sagittarius season, that's a good one. So that's a college fund that offers scholarships to Native American Indian people. And what they say on their website is currently only 15% of American Indians hold college degrees, but with 42% of Native Americans being 24 years or younger, that's a big statistic. You know, it's really important to help them get through and get their education. And a big issue now with COVID is many have dropped out or not signed back up to go to school, and the tech divide has been a big issue. So out on reservations, not with access to things, you know, you can't go to school, you don't have the resources. So I thought this fund looked really great
to support the
kids coming through. So collegefund.org, go check them out. Anyone, send my birthday presents to them. I like to do that birthday, Christmas, you know, give money to a charity, you know, because I'm okay. So that takes us through to our next section, which is what's on your coffee table, Christopher? What are you reading at the moment?
A fabulous book. which I absolutely love. I've just begun it. It's called 1,000 Years of Joys and Sorrows, and it's by the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei.
Oh, right.
And it's a magnificent book. I, you know, it's funny. He was living in New York at the same time I was, and actually was just like one block away. I never met him, but, you know, just to sort of like discover this, I was drawn to the book. His art has been on my personal radar for a number of years. And it was just funny to discover, you know, like in the photographs, I was like, wait, no, that's my neighborhood. Like, that's, you know, that's where he was living. But he's, it's a beautiful book. It's an autobiography, but it reads like a novel. And I'm just where he's talking about his father, who was a major poet in China, and his father's growth and development as a poet, and the time that he spends in Paris in the 20s, and in I think maybe up to the 30s, I'm not quite sure, it might have just been the 20s. And it's just really a beautiful book. He's born into this re-education camp and raised by his father, who's this poet, and he becomes this artist. And just to see the evolution of this person, the way that he tells it, and the poetry of his father is just, you know, you put down the book and you have to soak it in. You just have to take it in. But I wanted to share with you a quote from the book, which I think is very indicative of some of what we've been talking about today. I think it's really quite relevant. And he says in the book, quote, "The advocacy of freedom is inseparable from an effort to attain it. For freedom is not a goal, but a direction. And it comes into being through the very act of resistance."
Mm.
I just think it's just such a fabulous quote, that freedom's not a goal, it's a direction, you know.
And the resistance part of it, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what we were talking about, you know, like resisting the integration or resisting complacency.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of things, and keeping fired up the consciousness and the awareness. So, you know, it's a marvelous book. And I just hope, you know, everyone goes and, you know, just go and check out his art online, which is just wonderful. And just, it's called 1,000 Years of Joys and Sorrows. And it's just a really, really beautiful
read. And I love that you are talking about an artist's book, because I know you have Moon in Pisces, and I think that's a good self-care effort for you. Anything to do with art and artists and the poetry, beautiful.
Right. Well, and he's what I would call, you know, people talk about activist artists, or they talk about, but he's what I would call a heroic artist, you know, because he keeps going back to China. He's been imprisoned, you know. He was imprisoned, I think, for about 3 months or thereabouts, but he keeps returning. And he was saying in an interview, his mother's like, please don't, you know, like, you have a child and you're imperiling your child or whatever. But he keeps doing this because that's his country, it's his homeland, and this is his way of continuing what's beautiful about his culture there.
It's on our mission.
So he's like a heroic artist.
Yeah, you know? That's beautiful. Very strong. Yeah. Well, I'm reading something by Brian Clark. I'll have to read most of it after I finish my book, but it's called Soul, Symbol, and Imagination. And I'll read out the blurb for it. Astrology is so much more than a predictive and prescriptive typology. It is a soulful and evocative tradition that engages us in both rational and imaginal ways of knowing. As a practice involving the archetypal world of ideas, images, and symbols, it places the practitioner in between the event and the soul's experience as the one who can see through the literal to the symbolic. Each horoscope is an invitation to consider the gods that live through us and the archetypal powers that pave our path of life. And I really like the way that Brian does teach from this sort of way. Like, that's what he does. He really goes into the I guess anyone that goes into that mythological archetypal and can bring that through, very poetic. He has Neptune on his moon, which made so much sense to me about why he has this approach. And I love that he's put together a whole book on it. So I like that too, because I feel like it's tapping into Neptune. I've got Neptune on my sun. So I love that feeling in that place. So, and any book by Brian Clark's going to be fantastic.
He's fantastic.
And so that's it. So what's your key takeaway for this month and monthly mantra? Do you have one?
Key takeaway for the month and a monthly mantra. Let's hear yours.
Okay. Well, mine, I probably say this every Sag season. The truth will set you free. Aww. Is my takeaway always. And monthly mantra is, I easily see and speak my truth while respecting the truth of others.
Yeah, that's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I just have an image or an idea.
A feeling.
Well, the thing is, to me, Sagittarius, and here I'm apologizing ahead of time. I'm being Northern Hemisphere centric. So, you know, please excuse and forgive me. But Sagittarius is the last spark of light before the sun returns in the spring. Okay. And so to me, that last spark of light is like a candlelight. And it's a candlelight of faith and belief that you carry with you through the dark.
That the sun will come back.
That the sun will come back. And that's really what it represented. You know, and so, you know, Aries is beginning the agricultural year. It's the sun rising up, and, you know, and Leo is reveling, you know, in here in the north in summer, you know, type of thing. But it was Sagittarius that had to carry the spark from one year to the next, you know. And to me, that would be like the image. You carry that spark, you carry that candlelight, you know, of faith through whatever may be dark. But the beautiful thing about Sagittarius is an inexhaustible belief in the future. You know, other signs may
very positive.
it's a really, really beautiful thing, I think, especially in times where beliefs themselves are both authentic and counterfeit. You know, to really sort of focus on that belief and what speaks to your spirit. And as you were saying, Vanessa, what speaks to the spirit or belief that feels like me?
Yeah. You know? What resonates?
Yeah. And this is the beauty of Sagittarius. And I think it's the beauty of the season. It's the advent. It's the waiting for the appearance of the divine with anticipation.
The sun. I like that you've brought this seasonal track. I know, I mean, it is informed by the Northern Hemisphere, so that it is what it is. So I like that you brought that in, and I like the way you put that. I didn't think of it like that, actually, the last spark of light and the sun will come back, have faith. Yes, I like that very much. Oh. And so that brings us to a close of the Cosmic Eye Sagittarius season. What do you have coming up? What are you up to? You're writing at the moment. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I'm writing.
You're writing a book. As am I. We're both writing a book.
I know. We're on the manuscript treadmill.
Loving it. We both got Mercury in Sagittarius, so loving it.
Well, I have Mercury in Sagittarius too. Come on. Yeah. What else are you going to do with it?
Pontificating.
And published pontification. It's not just any pontification, it's published pontification.
Well, Sag is about publishing, isn't it?
Right, ninth house, exactly. Yeah. But I turn in the manuscript to my second book. It's actually technically my third book on December 1st in Sagittarius season.
Oh my gosh.
And my editor is a Sagittarius. So I'm hoping that all of it, you know, will go well. But it's on the sun. It's on the rising sign. The previous two books were ruling planets and cosmic calendar. And then this is on the rising sign.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very excited about that, because I went through every rising sun sign combination that you could, you know. I just, no one's talked about that. So I did all 144.
That's so full on. So keep your eye out for when that comes out. When will that be hitting the shelves?
That's going to be September, October of 2022.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. What do you have coming up?
Well, I'm writing. Are you doing readings? Are you open for readings? You have a talk.
There's rulingplanets.com and I do IG lives with my bestie, Emily Jensen.
Emily, yes, I love.
We go and we unpack all these sorts of different things in astrology and things like that. And I'm sure there's some other things that I'm whatever. It's a blur. It's a blur. It's just, you know, I spend so much time in the future.
Yes. Yeah, it's important to look back as well and contextualize things.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing the same, writing a book that's through to February, actually. Also open for readings.
Okay.
And I don't have other things to come to because I'm too busy. But I'm looking at Astrology University and what they have coming up, of course, all these great things. I don't know how anyone can choose. There's a few things do them all. Absolutely. Do the proper whole course is what I say.
Right.
So there is Demetra George, anything by Demetra. Awesome. Egyptian Deacons, Star Gods of Time. That's on November 20. That looks really interesting. Of course, if you miss the live, you can always go back and watch these. There is Jupiter in Pisces. So that's more for what's coming up when Jupiter goes into Pisces, The Heavens Open by Lynn Bell. That's November 28th on my birthday, November 28th, everyone.
And Lynn Bell's always fabulous.
Lynn Bell's fantastic. All of these speakers are fantastic. Then we have the awesome Saffron Rossi with Zodiacal Polarities and the Mythic Imagination. Speaking of mythic, she's very another mythic person. Love this. Do December 1st for that one. Oh, we've got a natal chart synthesis 201, and that trips a lot of people up, doesn't it, when you get to the aspects and then the synthesis. So that would be great. That is December 1 to 27, so that's a bit of a course. Yeah, that's a course. And Tony's bringing this one, the social planets Jupiter and Saturn.
Wonderful.
So that's December 1st. This one on Venus. Oh, the retrograde in Capricorn to get more about that. That's by Tony too. So that's going to have, that will discuss how the retrograde works as well. He's quite good at sharing that in a way that one can understand.
I know, where your eyes don't glaze over. It's so
he's always making it interesting.
Make it so simple, right.
It's wonderful. So astrologyuniversity.com, go to the events calendar and you'll find all the upcoming.
Oops, sorry about the blooper here, folks. We lost the tail end of the recording here where Vanessa was about to wrap things up by saying, head over to astrologyuniversity.com/events to learn more about our event calendar. Well, thanks for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And until next time, take good care. Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.